Broadcasting from the super-secret underground bunker at World Headquarters, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Stand by. Accessing primary security protocols. Your access has been approved. Welcome to Level 117.
We are back. And I am so glad the holidays are over. Just simply because...
They're over.
Less stress. Well, the holidays are so much of a disruption on everything. I mean, all the TV shows were off, so we couldn't do recaps. All the podcasts were dark. I was like, we didn't have anything to do. I was getting stir crazy.
Really?
Yeah. Like anybody could tell, right?
We do podcasts on Christmas specials or something.
Well, we. The stir crazy part we weren't sure of. The crazy part.
Yes, exactly. Confident. Greetings, everyone. Welcome to this edition of Level 117 with the Sci-Fi Chicks, Sci-Fi for Chicks. Jason Hunt here, along with Maya Aids in the studio.
Good evening.
Timothy Harvey's here.
Hello.
Dan Hanley's here.
Hello.
And joining us from the Chicks side of the lounge, Heather French in Dallas, Texas.
Cheers.
And Marie Lim out in parts unknown and unsupervised.
Hey, and Maya is one of the chicks too, so don't leave her out of the
Yes,
whole
she
chick
is,
side.
But she is. She's but I'm a regular. But she's the regular.
Level,
yeah, she's. Yes.
I know.
But,
you know,
but
she's one of my people
chick.
Too.
She's a double agent.
Yeah. Yes, and one of the reasons that we are crossing over shows tonight is because Agent Carter has finally made her debut on ABC. We're talking about the 2 hours. It's actually really not a two-hour pilot. It's two episodes back-to-back, which I think is cheating.
Except that it is two parts of the same story.
It is two parts of the same story, and I think it's going to be the whole 7 weeks is going to be the same story. But I still think they're cheating, because when we were kids, when we were younger, the pilot was a two-hour movie. It was a two-hour telefilm.
Because it had to set up the rest of the show.
Yeah, and nowadays we get an hour pilot and then nothing. We get it.
It's called syndication.
It's not special anymore. Well, I know, but the two-hour pilots back then were just broken up into part one and part two, and they just changed the opening titles. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, yeah.
But now we have other media to get information from. Now we have the internet and all kind of WikiLeaks and stuff.
I think the editors just got lazy. They don't
want to
do the extra set of titles.
I don't know. It could be. Anyway, speaking of editing, some creative use of Captain America, the First Avenger, in tonight's episodes, which I thought was good, because that immediately sets up a connection not only with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, mm-hmm. but Peggy's connection to Steve Rogers, and puts
and
everything kind of into context.
Makes it seem like Peggy is just a sidekick.
Really? You felt like she was a sidekick?
Oh, Marie's going to be the
By the way, Marie's going to rant on this one.
Okay. Yeah. Gotcha.
I should have warned you.
Well, do we get into plot first, or we want to just bounce around? How do we want to do this today? Because normally,
gone in a straight line.
Well, now this season, what we have done, and I've been very careful to try to continue to do this, is we've explained the plot, we've gone through plot first, and then we take a break, and then we go into analysis and reaction. But since we've got a two-hour pilot, I'm not sure that everybody's up for doing a two-hour show so much. So,
well, and you're calling this a Chicks crossover.
That's true.
And in Chicks, we just pretty much go willy nilly wherever.
Well,
the thought takes us.
Let's follow the lead.
You might want to find a different term for that.
Willy nilly?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not any different than digressing, which is what we do.
Do you remember some of the words we talked about in our last podcast?
Yes, yes, I do.
You know, I was guest hosting the Big Dumb Fun Show last night, and some of the guests that were in had to be told over on the wall. There's a list of the words that you cannot say. We don't have that list here. We don't have such a list. I don't know. Do we need to? We're.
Well, we never get around to saying those words.
Yeah, mostly because we just don't know enough of those words. If people would like to let us know what those words are.
No. That's okay. That's all right.
You can send us a list at.
Yeah. All right. So let's just get into ranting and analysis of everything.
Yeah,
the basics of the episodes that we got tonight. Agent Carter is feeling a little bit out of sorts because he's not taken seriously as an agent, which I think was overplayed a little bit myself. And the basic gist of the episodes, Howard Stark is being set up to take the fall as a traitor to his country because he's come up with some weaponized chemical material.
Didn't he call them his baddies?
His bad babies.
Bad babies.
His bad babies. And there's so much you could do with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good marketing thing. You should do plush toys of bad babies.
Yes. I want to see what's going on. What was going on in Monaco? Because, you know, Howard mentions Monaco in some context, and we need to see that.
Yeah, there's clearly a lot more to be told there.
Keep in mind, we're still waiting for Budapest.
Oh, I know. I don't know that we're going to get Budapest, though. But the idea here is that Stark recruits Agent Carter to be his inside man, as it were, to root out the actual people who have stolen his technology to make this implosion bomb that, of course, involves the Vita rays, the Vita radiation that we saw in the first Captain America movie. A nice little nod to Erskine on the little Vita ray detector.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we did get quite a few name drops tonight. Roxanne Oil and Ivan Vanko's dad shows
right.
up.
Yeah.
What's his name? Ivan Vanko's dad is Mr. Vanko.
Yeah.
So he's
Vanko Senior. Yeah.
Vanko Senior.
Papa so, Vanko.
Yeah, he shows up, and to me, I thought it was a pretty solid 2 hours. There were some bits where the whole. There were some places where I thought the chauvinism was laid on a little bit thick.
The male chauvinism?
And granted, I wasn't around back then. My dad was a kid back then, so I don't really have any context.
Film noir guy?
Yes.
Yes. So there's quite... First of all, the production design was very, very good. Mm-hmm. Very pleased with. They did a very good job of hitting a lot of everything from the automats, which is great to see a little automat.
The Royal Typewriter.
The Royal Typewriter. And it's apparently a nod to the much missed Fringe show. So,
oh, yeah.
but look, the post-World War II, first of all, the chauvinism, yeah, that's kind of built right into it. I mean, it's... I think it was a little bit, it's weird to say, kind of almost a two-dimensional chauvinism.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who watches Mad Men is getting a deeper level.
Right.
Okay, this is actually for a TV show that's essentially comic book. And a lot of the color choices throughout the course of the show was very interesting. It was almost four color comic book.
Yeah, you were mentioning some of that color, while we were sitting and watching
the shading for
palette.
Some of the stuff, which is kind of cool. It's a little more. This is a little more cliff notes
mm-hmm.
for the chauvinism. I mean, some of the detail level isn't there. The grays aren't there. But
right.
This is a lot more.
It's very overt.
But also bear in mind, post World War II. A lot of the women who had gone into the workforce in whatever area they had gone into.
Yeah.
When the men came back, suddenly those women were out of jobs.
Yeah, they were expected.
Well, and
they
mentioned that with the roommate coming home mm-hmm. and saying, oh, well, I don't have a job anymore.
Themselves being treated as, you know, okay, the men are back now.
Pat you on the head
you
and go
can go
home.
Back to yeah. yeah you can go back to you go off to be somebody's wife or be the nurse or be whatever it is that you know you can get me my coffee
right which we were seeing a lot of in the office there. But I would, but see, the thing that bugs me, and they even address it when Jarvis says, "I read your war record." You would think that the other people that are in the SSR would be familiar enough with Agent Carter's war record
But it doesn't matter if you're familiar with it, because you have to remember the attitudes at the time. And I'm not saying that, you know, that I'm not going into this whole men were bad and evil, but that it was definitely a male-dominated thing. They're coming back from the war. They want their jobs back. And when they left, women were not all of these great things. And so they still have this attitude, this pre-war attitude. And then they were the ones that were fighting on the front lines. There weren't a lot of Agent Carters that were fighting. You had a lot of women that were still in very much supportive roles. And it's hard to change a societal view like that in just a year or two.
Well, go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, you've also got to consider that this is a show about Agent Carter. And a lot of times an artistic sort of device that is used a lot of times is to show things a little bit from the perspective of the protagonist. And so if she perceives, if you know, because she's trying to get ahead, she's trying to get respect, and she's not getting the respect, she kind of might see a little bit more of it than there might be. And so they're probably, you gotta keep in mind that if it's about her, it's probably going to be pushing her perspective a little bit.
Well, go ahead.
Well, excuse me. I just also wanted to point out that at the very beginning, we also get a very clear sense of what they view her war record as being. They aren't viewing her as being this, you know, successful intelligence agent or soldier or any of the things she did during the war. They're viewing her as Captain America's handler. Mm-hmm. And the way that they would say the word handler would be with a wink and a nod.
Liaison.
I bet they were doing a whole lot of liaison.
Fondue.
You know. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Because, and again, we come, but some of that, you know, some of that was also, again, a cultural thing. And not to mention the fact she's a foreigner.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Well, that's true.
You got a bunch of different layers operating here in post World War II America. So late 40s, early 50s, there's a lot of cultural things. For a woman to have her skill set, there are not a lot of jobs. For the intelligence community, it was, you know, very male dominated. Oddly enough, at this point in time, the computer world was full of female programmers. So
yeah,
funny that.
Well, my mom grew up in the post time of this, and really her choices were teacher, nurse, waitress, mother. And that she graduated in the mid-50s. So this was kind of what the general view was, and then you had your standouts. So I don't think it was, for me, unbelievable at all, because it wasn't mean chauvinism. It was just...
Oh, well, I'm not necessarily saying that it was unbelievable. I just think that it was just laid in there so much that it was like, we don't want you to miss it.
I think that, you know, you aren't going to see it as much because you don't get it. Mm-hmm. You don't get sexism. It doesn't happen very often to men as it happens to women. And, like, I did not think it was thick at all.
Neither did I.
No. Yeah, I'm not saying... Wait.
You saw it so thick.
I'm not saying that it was...
It's because you're trying to defend...
No, now wait, we're not going to get into whole Gamergate misogyny thing.
I know she's going, she's not trying to provoke that. I mean, it's just, we're seeing it different. You're seeing it as a guy.
No, I understand that. I'm not seeing it as a guy. I'm seeing it as a writer. As a writer, I'm looking at it and I'm seeing all of these characters doing all of the same thing. And after a while, I'm sitting there saying, okay, I get it. They think she's furniture. Okay, fine. I get it. Now, I understand.
But after a while, that is how she would have been treated.
well,
back then. I mean, you're seeing it as a guy writer. I'm seeing it as maybe a female character, and she's this. It is called Agent Carter.
You're right.
So it may also be written more where we're seeing it how she would have perceived it. So maybe if it was more objective, maybe it wouldn't be that. But maybe is really a personification of what Agent Carter is seeing in her world.
Which is what Dan was saying just a few minutes ago. Right. Tim, go ahead.
The majority of people watching this aren't necessarily going to be writers.
No, that's true.
So, you know, you have to make sure that you're looking at it from all points of view and not just from a writing point of view, because, you're going to see it differently as a writer than you're going to see it as a viewer. And as a viewer, you know, you have to look at it all the different ways, because if you only look at it one way, then you're just going to see it how maybe you want to see it.
The thing is, though, the people that are talking here, none of us are able to look at this in the way that a casual viewer is going to see it. We see things about these shows that most people are not going to see because we're all writers or we're performers or, you know, but we have a specific viewpoint that we see this show from, which is not the one that probably most viewers out there have.
There's a couple of things. One, film noir or anything set, basically, if you're looking at a film set in the 40s or 50s or anymore, modern culture, your perception of that's going to be a film noir movie. There is very little that is set in the world that Peggy Carter is inhabiting that is not a film noir film right now, okay? Mm-hmm. Mad Men, shows like that, that's set in the advertising world. It's a very rarefied atmosphere kind of thing. No matter what the levels of depth in that show, for this kind of storytelling, you're looking at film noir, which, let's face it, very few people are actually, there's not a huge line for film noir films. We had actually just had a film noir festival here in Kansas City. It did extremely well. It's a very popular genre, but you don't go to the movie theater to catch the latest film noir picture.
Right.
Okay? It's not something that happens. I'd love to see it happen. I love the entire genre. But in many respects, remember, these are the episodes that are setting up the show. So you need to, a lot of the stuff that we're getting right now is going to be the things that set the tone. Mm-hmm. So we are establishing that she's in a world where she's not taken seriously, no matter what her skills are, no matter what her history is. She is taken seriously by people at varying levels of degree, which is very interesting. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at while most of the guys in the SSR are painted as being very condescending to her,
Agent Sousa is not.
Agent Sousa is not. But also, interestingly enough, her boss, while he treats her like a secretary,
mm-hmm.
he also, oddly, of all of them, except for Sousa, is treating her more like she is a intelligent secretary. And it's very strange because I'm watching all this because everybody comes in grays, okay?
Right.
You got everything from what the fat, horrible.
With the diner customer?
No, he was fat and horrible too. Fat, horrible agent.
Yeah, the one who can't drive a truck.
The one who can't drive a truck or goes skinny dipping and wants her to file everything, okay? he is clearly, you know, the establishment of everything that, you know. That guy now.
Mm-hmm. He's Harvey Bullock.
He's Harvey Bullock. Without the charm.
Yes.
Or
the snappy lines.
Right. But then you look at the other two agents. You look at the chief and you look at the blonde agent, Thompson.
Yeah.
And they're painted in grayer tones. Okay, we've got a spectrum here, which is the way it should be, actually. Now, how they continue to play those characters out in the course of the show is, you know, if these guys stay the same way, well then, you know,
right?
Then what's the point? We're going to assume that they're not, because this is Agent Carter. She is going to be helping found S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
Right. So we're going to have to work with some idea that she's basically going to at some point, you know, smack these guys up about their heads physically or metaphorically, and so
or maybe both.
Yeah.
And establish that she is, you know, who she is, and then that she can do what she can do, and that she's good, damn well was going to be taken seriously.
Mm-hmm. Right now, she's using it to her advantage.
This is true.
Yes. Great,
she, yeah. Which is, you know, a pro and a con for her. Because, you know, yeah, it, the situation that they're not taking her seriously works to her advantage to a point. Yeah.
Well, like being able to bring in the coffee and get all the info that she needed.
Yeah, but if she had all the, if they were looking at her the way they should be, then she would have the resources. Those resources that they have at her disposal as well.
Except the way that they're written, they're kind of like monkeys in suits, and they would have messed it up.
Well,
that's funny because on Gotham, yeah. You know, Maroni goes in. This week's episode of Gotham, Maroni calls Penguin. You're a smart monkey, but you're still a monkey, and I'm the zookeeper. And there's that established hierarchy that I think we're seeing in here as well, because and this could be more, you know, men women hierarchy the way they're seeing it, mm-hmm. rather than I'm the boss, you're the agent, or you're the junior agent, or you're the cadet or whatever. It's not really so much it's not a chain of command thing so much as, you know, men women thing. Would you think this would work just as well as a black and white?
Yes. In fact, part of me really wants this show to be in black and white.
I do too. I'm looking at, especially with that hat.
Let's get Tim a black and white television.
I'll just download the episodes and run them through a filter.
Well, I could just turn the color off on the TV the next time we watch it.
Well, but again, you know, from a visual standpoint, they really shot this and framed things and colored things and lit things in very much a four-color comic book. There's an emphasis on a particular color or a particular light source or a particular thing in almost every shot. Not everything. It's not consistent mm-hmm. across the board. But there's moments. And as I told Jason, the red hat serves two purposes. One, it lets us know where Carmen Sandiego got the idea. And two, it's you put on a red hat like that, and that's the only thing anyone's looking at.
Well, that's true. But it doesn't match the suit. And to me, and it could be just me, but I look at that and I think, a red hat with a blue suit. No, the hat should at least be a complementary color.
It's
but,
the only,
you know?
And, well, the thing is that it's the only thing you're looking at, too.
Well, yeah, but because it bugs me. Well, and that actually led me to, this would look much better on black and white.
Well, I just think, oddly enough, the way the show is lit, and again, this comes back to my fondness for film noir, is that if you were to take this show, put it into black and white, and crunch your blacks,
yeah.
For you kids at home, crunching your blacks basically means just giving your blacks the depth, making them actually as black as they can be. There's a tendency to make blacks very gray, especially on television.
Making mm-hmm. black.
Making black.
Right. Yes.
Black. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called crunching blacks in editing. Color correction. But this show would really, really do well.
It's lit for it.
It's lit for it.
The funny thing is, when I think back on the episode, I really sort of think of it as black and white with just touches of color here and there.
Almost like it's desaturated a little bit.
Yeah, there are places where it is lit. It is colored very, very vividly, but a lot of it is desaturated.
But I mean,
it's very interesting to watch.
There's really only some certain colors that stand out in my mind mm-hmm. as I think back on the episode. It was the reds in certain places mm-hmm. and the glowing orbs. And that was really the most standout colors that I saw.
So let's talk about the glowing orbs for a second. Oh,
there was
ahead.
Actually an article in the Dallas Morning News today about that, where they said that until you saw something like the red hat or something, it almost looked like it was in black and white.
Yeah, it did.
Because they made a big point of that in the Dallas Morning News.
Yeah, and I think that I think it would work really well. Yeah. Even if you dialed it down 50%.
Well, it's clearly an artistic choice. I mean, the folks behind the show, whether they're a lighting choice or it's post production, obviously. It's clearly meant to both evoke comic book color schemes, mm-hmm. but also to invoke 1940s movies.
Well, and it also does. I think and this is an impression because I haven't looked at all the pages yet. But the recent titles from Marvel in the Original Sin line mm-hmm. are all that, you know, some of the historical stuff and some backgrounds and some retrospective type of stories, And one of them, of course, is Agent Carter, and it has to deal with, you know, the beginnings of her time at SSR and mm-hmm. SHIELD and all that. And from just looking at the artwork on those books, there's a consistency with, you know, some of the color palettes that they're using in the Marvel books right now and what they're doing in Agent Carter. And really, it's even consistent with the first Captain America movie a little bit.
Right. Well, yeah, they're...
It's not quite as Captain America wasn't quite as noir because it wasn't a mystery. It was a war movie. I mean,
yeah, war movies have a different setting. The interesting thing about this, and we talk about this sometimes. There's a lot of visual shorthand mm-hmm. when it comes to movies and television. You see an image that is designed to give you an impression about something, so they don't have to sit there and explain it. Okay,
right.
And color is one of those things, and. Whether it makes sense on a purely aside from a, you know, oh, that's just what it was available at the time. If you think the 1940s, half the world seems to think that the 1940s were in black and white. And the 1940s were in black and white, and the 1910s were in sepia.
You mean it wasn't?
And then
it wasn't that
way. Anything in the 1800s, there were no cameras.
Oh, actually, there were. They just didn't.
Oh, sure.
Daguerreotypes.
People had no expressions.
Well, and
I know.
And there were cars in the 1800s too, but don't tell anybody. Yeah. You know. So, but it's visual shorthand. It gets the point across. Is that if you desaturate the image, and several of the films that I've made that are set in period pieces in 20s and 40s. That's exactly what I've done. I pulled not all the color, but enough of the color out because it tells the audience
where we are.
Yeah, it's grayer or it's, you know, it's more of black and white. Clearly, it's old.
Yes, exactly. Oh, wait. Well, on that note,
yes,
feeling old and tired and worn out and stuff. We'll take a break. And then when we come back, we'll do a little bit more analysis and ranting and try to figure out where the rest of the show is going when Level 117 continues. Stand by.
You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio until you unsubscribe in a sudden but inevitable betrayal.
All right, you all listening to Level 117, you are no doubt true believers of some stripe, as are we, and some of you are probably even fans of the Distinguished Competition. So, now that the first wave of DC Comics television shows are on the air, it's time to talk about them. Our new DC TV podcast, we call it The Rogues Gallery, and you can hear that same place you hear everything else, right here on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Podcasting, the fandom frontier. These are the voyages of Sci-Fi for Chicks, our continuing mission to explore strange new topics, to seek out new fantasy and new science fiction, to boldly go where no man has gone before, because face it, guys just don't get it. Girls can be geeks too. Tune in for the woman's POV on genre entertainment, geek culture, and anything else we want to talk about. Subscribe to Sci-Fi for Chicks on iTunes, and follow us on Twitter. As part of the Sci-Fi for Me Radio Network, Sci-Fi for Chicks is proud to be your feminist portal to the science fiction multiverse.
And now, back to Level 117, the only 100% Hydra-free podcast on the internet. Hail Hydra!
Back on Level 117, Jason Hunt here, along with Heather French down in Dallas. And
yo.
Marie Lim out in Timbuktu.
Hello.
Here in the studio, Maya Aids.
Good evening.
Dan Handley.
Hello.
Timothy Harvey.
Hey.
And we are discussing Agent Carter on this special chickified edition of Level 117. And we're going to be doing this for the next 7 weeks, talking about Agent Carter. And let's start with Marie's rant, because before we get into the whole chauvinism red hat thing, Marie said something rather interesting. We want to pick up that thread. You have a rant about Agent Carter being a sidekick of some sort. Where are you going with that? Go ahead.
That's
that's what they're making it seem like to me, at least, because I'm sitting there, and the first thing I see, you know, within, like, the first, what, 5 minutes? Or isn't it, like, the first shot is him, is Captain America going down in the plane?
Right.
That establishes... the first shot of her is in a bright red hat with blue and white streamies and a blue and red suit, and it's just like, okay, so she's his sidekick. Like, that's all I could think, was just like, you're, what are you guys doing? What are you doing? Make her her own character. Don't keep putting in, like, oh, it just, it bugged me that there kept being, like, backflashes to Captain America.
But that's
when
that's the entry point for everybody into this story, because one, it's a period piece, so you have to have some reason for people to want to watch a period piece, and second is the fact that it's Agent Carter. Well, everybody knows Agent Carter from Captain America, so if we're going to have our pilot episode now not about her color outfit, but I'm saying we're establishing a history of the character in the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, then it makes sense to say, okay, here's where we start with Agent Carter's story on her own, and that's when she lost Steve.
It was like a reminder of, this is where you've seen her before.
Yeah, exactly.
She is the new Bucky.
I've never seen her as a sidekick.
No.
But I see what Maria is saying. The fact that she's wearing Captain America's colors, to me, maybe not so much that they're trying to make her a sidekick so much as we're visually showing that she's carrying the torch for Steve Rogers. Maybe.
Well, that part
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Heather.
Well, I was going to say what I think I can kind of see in that way is, just like we were talking about the way men were treating her then, it's almost like the story in a way is treating her that way as well, because Captain America is present so much throughout this entire 2 hours when he's already gone. And so, I mean, I can kind of see where she's coming from. It's like we're constantly being hit over the head, Captain America, and she's sad about this.
She keeps trying to throw him off, too, because there keeps being that little Captain America Adventure Hour or whatever it was, and she keeps turning it off. She keeps making it very clear she doesn't want to hear that. So why do we need all these reminders? Why can't we have our own character, girl who started S.H.I.E.L.D.? Why can't we just have our Agent Carter?
Okay. Well, because she hasn't started S.H.I.E.L.D. yet. We haven't gotten to that process yet. We are in the process, and Tim, you want to address this a little bit?
Well,
I think you're
looking for something. And I don't think you're wrong, but I think you're looking for something that we should, in the context of this show, get. But I think it would be very unlikely to get it in the first episodes, because we know who she is. We know why we're tuning in to watch this show.
And anybody who's watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. knows who she is,
but
sort of.
There's a huge, you know, remember the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hemorrhaged viewers in its first season that it did not get back.
And people who have watched the movies not necessarily watching the shows.
And you raised a really good point earlier that, you know, the average viewer, the regular viewer, is their context is the Captain America movie. And so all of that's there for them. They're the ones that they're trying to anchor her in that world and anchor her sense. Yes. Not only do you have this terrible radio show, which
actually is kind of cool,
which has some what's kind of
corny kind of way.
Cool about the radio show is that it's actually really accurate for how they did radio shows.
Yes,
with this, it is. You know, that random product placement, which is so clearly the sponsor of the show.
Yeah,
complete.
Just waiting for Ovaltine.
Oh yeah. Well, here's my little digression. We've done pretty good with no digressions. Not many digressions tonight.
We started with a digression. Right. But
here's my little digression. huge fan of the Shadow Radio Show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Much bigger fan of the Maxwell Grant Shadow novels.
Right.
Okay. Margot Lane in the Shadow novels and Margot Lane on the radio show are two incredibly different female characters.
And I like, too, the fact that the radio show actors, just to follow this rabbit hole just a little bit, the radio show actors didn't necessarily look like the characters they were playing.
No, of course not.
We've run across that before. A few years ago, I was part of a theater company. We did staged readings, mm-hmm. and we did one of the ones we did was The Lone Ranger. We got mm-hmm. permission from Broadway Video, who owned it at the time. They sent us the shooting scripts for the Clayton Moore show.
Oh, right, cool.
With pencil notations from the directors, and it's cool. and we're adapting it for radio, and the guy that I had playing the Lone Ranger was 6'10", black guy. I mean, huge guy, but he had the voice. And the guy playing Tano was 6'3", white as a ghost, red hair, and you're sitting there going, these guys don't look a thing like the characters, but they sure do sound like it. And that guy playing Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
This little frumpy guy with the horn-rimmed glasses playing Captain America.
Yeah, but it worked.
And that's how radio was. But, it was great to see that.
But, you know, to pull
well,
back
Well, I
from
look
this,
nothing like the character I play on radio. So.
Exactly. Me either.
I'm much taller on radio. but, you know, to pull back from this, from my little digression there, you're right. She's trying to escape from that. You're very right because it's the shadow that hangs over her.
Yeah.
And not only is it's the shadow of what she's it's the shadow of the man that she loved that she's lost. It's the shadow of the life that she had that she can't have right now because the people around her won't let her.
Right.
It's the shadow of that responsibility she had that no one's letting her take. And I think we're starting to see her become, you know, she's stepping out of that, okay? But she also does things like step out of the fact that she feels like she has to isolate herself completely to keep other people from being hurt.
Right, which was a big piece of all of this
but
tonight.
But to me, that was extremely heavy-handed.
Yeah.
It was like, here, it's the weight you must carry. I must always be alone for fear of hurting others. It's like, oh, for crying out loud. Really?
She's Batman.
and
darkness.
But it's the same kind of thing. It's like so to me, but again, we're watching this as critics. We're watching this as analysts.
Right.
We're watching this as writers and people who pay attention to things like this. For the audience, this is the hand-holding portion of our program. This is the point, especially the first episode. This is the folks where it's like, hey, guys, remember that lady from Captain America, the first one? Yeah, the one with the red skull in it, yeah.
And the
that
accent. One,
and the accent. She had she shot at him. He had the shield. Okay, she's got her own TV show now.
Yes.
That's what this is.
That's what it is.
And
it's exactly what
and
it is.
What hopefully what we've got is because they've given her a fun world to play in, we've got a really good actress playing the part.
Mm-hmm.
They're writing her like she's a smart person.
Yep.
They're not treating her like she's, you know,
a ditzy blonde.
For some of the cliches and stereotypes that we're getting here, they're not really writing her as one, which is important.
Right. She's reacting to those kind of things.
And
I think that kind of goes back to I don't know if it was Heather or Marie that made the point of that and Dan even said this too about Carter being the point of view character that maybe we're filtering through her perceptions in this show,
mm-hmm.
Which is not something that the Marvel shows have done before. So much, but maybe that's just the starting point for the writing is everything centers around how she perceives her reality, maybe.
Maybe Cap really isn't that prevalent, but because she's so sensitive to it, it's all that much more prevalent.
Well, right.
Once you're kind of aware of something,
it's like
every
time
you see it.
Yeah, it's like when you buy
a
Suburban.
It becomes heavy.
You buy a Volkswagen.
As opposed to if you just didn't even think of it.
Exactly. You buy a Volkswagen, suddenly you see Volkswagens everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see the number 108 everywhere. Everywhere. Guess what show I love, so. I have to get it into every podcast somehow. So.
Of course. Okay. So... one thing now, and I'm gonna step out on it, I'm sure, here, but one thing that I liked, and I noticed this especially when Peggy was wearing the blonde wig and she's doing the whole Veronica Lake thing, mm-hmm. and then afterwards a couple of different times. I like the fact that they have not sat down with Haley Atwell and said, you need to be a size 2.
Mm, yes.
I like that she's got curves, that she looks like a real person.
Well,
and you
in
know,
fact, she's one of the more well-endowed women on the show.
Well, let me.
Well, it's not really that. It's just it's the whole package. It's like they're not even trying. I don't know. I'm saying it right, but you know what I mean.
It's from that time period.
Exactly.
That model of beauty.
Right. They in the very first place when they cast her in Captain America.
Yeah.
They cast somebody who looks like. And it's she looks like a pinup girl. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not meant to be, that's, I didn't, you know, but it's a look, it's a style, and it's
of that era.
Of that era.
Yeah.
Right.
And
not a pinup girl of this era.
Right.
But,
so
yeah.
I don't know. See, I want to say modern.
See, it's a very thin limb.
No, no,
I
know.
Know.
So I want to
even for me.
Well, no, I want to say modern audiences would notice if they cast some twiggy little.
No, I'm not sure they would.
I don't know that they would.
I'm not sure they would.
Well,
because that's what we see all the time.
This goes back to us being familiar with the craft.
Right.
And, you know, a regular person out there, I mean, you're getting people that actually look like what they looked like back then.
Right. And that's actually the casting wise across the board.
Yeah.
They did a really good job with casting people who, and yes, some of that is clothing, some of that is haircuts. But the body types of a lot of the men,
mm-hmm.
very much, a lot of the way that the fitness, the a lot of that stuff is very, you could have pulled a lot of these actors right out of the photographs of the time period, which is good casting.
Right.
But no, she looks like a character. She looks like a woman from the films of the period. Let's qualify that. But she always has, and she's a good choice, and she's not someone who looks out of place. And it was a time when the same standards of beauty that we have now were not exactly the same.
Well, I just,
and that's good. That's the way it should be.
Well, yes, I agree, and I think it's a testament to the show that they haven't tried to, you know, Hollywoodize it
to cast somebody that would be the same standard
exactly
that we're seeing.
That, you know, they're staying consistent with the time period, you know, even with the other characters, you know, the new cast members, you know, not so much because Haley Atwell is established already. They're not going to recast Peggy Carter, but you know, even with all of the rest of the cast, it fits. And it was just something that I noticed. And I was like, oh, this actually works because that's what they look like. All right, so the bombs. Let's talk a little bit about plot. We've gone on all the map tonight. James Frain shows up again as a bad guy. How many times has he played a villain now? He was
a villain
in The Cape.
Yeah, villain in The Cape.
Intruders.
Villain in Intruders.
It's called typecast.
What else has he been in that he was?
He's been on.
Was that the guy with the bigger ears?
On Grimm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was in Grimm. He was one of the bad princes.
Yeah. But who do we think? What's Leviathan? Leviathan is coming. Who's got a theory?
That's a good question. Leviathan does not ring any bells in my Marvel universe brain databanks at this point.
Could it be a? I don't say metaphor. Could it be a? A euphemism for Hydra? Could it be Hydra's coming back type of thing?
Well,
or
I really don't think Hydra ever showed its ugly head publicly until Winter Soldier. I mean, that when they had their big.
No, Hydra was all over the place in First Avenger.
But they basically went underground after that quote unquote defeat. But they started penetrating. Shield once it was established.
Right, but I'm saying now that Hydra has gone underground, could Leviathan be whatever is the new the 1946-47 iteration of Hydra, or is this something else?
I don't think so.
You don't think? What do you think it is?
I think it's something else too.
Okay.
I don't think that they would go along there, and you know, looking at some of the theories on here, it's really showing that Leviathan was kind of waging a war on Hydra, that they were not, that it was you know, enemy of my enemy or good guy, but that they, it's a different bad guy. If we had the same bad guy all the time, I think it would be a very much
boring,
you know, everybody's a Death Eater kind of a world. And I don't think that that's what this is. So I think Leviathan is something totally different.
Actually, did a little bit of Marvel Wikia-ing.
As you do.
As I do. Little is known of this mysterious organization. That's convenient. It was born out of the communist bloc in the same way that Hydra was born out of the Axis powers. So...
Oh, so we're looking at Stalin's boys.
Well, we're looking at something along those lines. And it was apparently also considered an enemy of Hydra.
Yeah, that's what Heather was
so,
saying.
So, enemy of
Leviathan double-crossed the other organizations, stealing the brood tech for themselves. In retaliation, Hydra and the Hand sabotaged Leviathan's tanks.
Could Leviathan... Okay, so if Leviathan is Russian, could it have a connection eventually somewhere down the road to both Winter Soldier and Black Widow?
Potentially.
Maybe.
Potentially, yeah.
Could be, maybe we're laying some groundwork for some connective tissue there later?
Could be.
Well, and I think you're looking at, too, because Hydra coming out with the World War II, that's when the Nazis were our baddie.
Right.
And post-World War II is when we're getting into Cold War. So we had a different kind of baddie. I mean, even Indiana Jones had the two different sides there. So I think, yeah, we're going definitely more Cold War.
Indiana Jones never was involved with any Cold War machinations. He was only operating during World War II. I don't know what you're talking about.
You'd better get over that quick, because if Harrison Ford has his way, he's got
la,
two
la,
more.
La, 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 la,
la, la, la. I saw a theory the other day on Twitter. Somebody posted, what if the Indiana Jones movies were just Han Solo having a carbonite dream?
That's not bad.
The smuggler's dream of carbonite sheep.
There we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
While he was in, hibernation sickness, hallucinating that he was somebody else. Okay, so next week we've got more of the mystery. Well, you know, we haven't even talked about Jarvis yet.
No.
I think Jarvis is going to be the breakout character.
I halfway think that Jarvis is going to be the husband, because I don't believe in his wife at all.
Oh, no. I don't think there's any way.
Well, we saw a photograph of...
We saw a photograph and we heard a voice, and that's all.
No. We saw a photograph in Winter Soldier. We saw a photograph of Carter's husband.
Do you know how many times that, you know, you can have photographs that are just like came with the picture frame?
Yeah, because we recast Howard Stark.
Well, these are spies.
No, that's true.
After all, it's like
Jarvis isn't.
I'll be really disappointed if they make him the like romantic interest.
I actually would rather him not.
That would be a waste of a really funny character.
You know, I'm actually with you, because one of the things we on the Sleepy Hollow podcast, I keep talking about, I don't want Abby and Crane to get together because they're so perfect as a pair, but not a romantic pair. So I think it
like,
would be very similar.
I want
similar
them to be like best friends, but I don't want there to be anything romantic between them. I don't think that makes sense. However, I want them to be making snappy comments at each other at every possible turn.
Well,
because that would make the show good for me.
I shall forego the linens. We're definitely picking up if Agent Carter is Batman, then it works, because Jarvis is Alfred, and you know, we're starting at that same emotional point for Peggy.
Yeah,
you know,
she lost
I have
everything.
To isolate everything. Darkness, you know. That,
okay, if we're
that
doing
thing,
that, then I'm going to have to go into the whole Gotham thing, and then we got to pull Alex in so that we can talk about Big
but
Bruce
I just say,
and
if we're,
Ivy and all
if,
that.
If we're drawing parallels in the archetypes, in the character types, then it's very unlikely that we'll see any kind of a romantic thing going on.
I don't
between
think
Peggy
they're going to. Let me go off of this. I don't want them to.
No, they shouldn't.
I think they
could end up that way, because writing happens, and it's not. That's also a way of saying a four-letter word happens.
Yes.
So
I want to see
the list. Refer to the list.
Yes.
That's why I said it that way.
But I want to see. Here's what I want to see. And we had a couple of things mentioned. On Twitter, they were talking about Mrs. Jarvis being like Howard Wolowitz's mom.
Yes. Yeah.
We never see her.
Right.
And I thought about Maris Crane from Frasier. Uh-huh. Never saw them. And I think if they play it right, it could really be funny that Mrs. Jarvis, we hear Mrs. Jarvis, We never see Mrs. Jarvis.
Or it's like Mr. Bell on the first season of Drew Carey Show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He didn't see him until the very last episode of the season.
Yes.
Well, it's, I mean, it's...
Wilson.
But
Wilson. You know, you can't DVR Jack Benny back then, so...
But you know what? He's so,
Well,
he's so clearly lying to her.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so clearly lying to her about, I have to, you know, 9 o'clock is my cutoff. All that stuff. It's so blatantly a lie. And then, of course, we had that moment where he sits there and you know, we have that reveal where he goes, "Yes, Mr. Stark, I, you know, she has no idea."
Right.
Well, you know, yes, he's.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know.
But he could be. He's lying to her. He's lying to her, but I don't think
he's not a butler.
I don't think Mrs. I don't think Mrs. Jarvis is.
He's
made
a computer.
Up. I don't think the wife is made up.
You don't?
No, I think. Well, we heard her. We heard her voice.
We
that
heard
doesn't mean
a,
it's a
voice.
I know. I think. Because it fits the character.
Well, I know it fits the character.
Stark, you can have something mechanical. There was a typewriter typing by itself. Come on.
He's the old Norman Bates thing.
He's
he is the wife.
He's the... Exactly.
The voice in his head.
He's the very first of the life model decoys.
Right. I still... Well, see, it works for me, though, because it gives Jarvis an added dimension that he otherwise would not have, because if you're putting Alfred and Alfred and Jarvis are basically the same character.
Yes,
they are snarky. They're the sidekick, the best friend, confidants,
British
the driver.
Butler, driver, war surgeon, and you know it's the same character. But to give Jarvis a wife and a curfew and Benny Goodman and a nightly routine, it adds
Dr. Leslie Tompkins.
Yeah, well, it adds dimension to Jarvis that you don't otherwise have. If that whole thing is just fabricated, then it's just him lying. I like that he's got that because
I think it like
complicates
the wife
his...
and the curfew. I think that all makes it like a cute character. I think it's like, oh, he's got his wife and he's got to be at home and he's got to watch his, he's got to listen to his radio and he's got to go to bed. And it's like, oh.
Well, it also complicates
his
life.
It's something that'll make the. It'll make people like him.
Yeah, but it also makes it harder for him to help Carter all the time, because he's got a life that he can't disrupt that routine so much, because it's gonna will happen.
I think if the wife is there and everything is fine with it, she knows completely what it is.
Going on?
Yeah,
or she's been paid off not to ask.
Well, I know. I think she's gonna be one of those people who's it's gonna be one of those things where she finally meets the wife. She's going to start off. It could happen. She's going to start off being like, "Oh yes, we're doing this," and Mrs. Jarvis is going to look at her and go, "Yeah, I know what he does for a living. It's okay. You have a bullet wound. Let me help clean that up. You know, clean the wound or something." I mean, it's going to be one of those things where, you know, he makes a big deal about it, and the wife's like,
eh.
"Yeah, this is yeah."
Yeah.
It's just the nature
I just
of the
hope
business.
She. I hope she doesn't show up. That's just
but...
me.
Okay.
What?
The character type for this man to be Debbie Domestic, he's the one who's ironing the linens, he's the one who's cooking, he's the one who's doing that.
Right.
What kind of job
Making
does his martini. Wife have?
Yeah. Well, who says she's got to have a job?
Well, there's a reason why he's home doing the domestic duties.
He's a manservant.
That's what he's used to doing. I mean, that's
actually,
what he does.
This is actually, yeah, this is a life.
Okay, most butlers don't go home to do that.
Yeah, but he's, he's not. Somebody like, somebody like Howard, yeah, actually, exactly in that era, because that's what they were.
Not
that,
for their wife.
That's
Why
his
not?
Whole gig.
Because the wife would be doing
but
in her home.
He's on 24/7. If you're working for someone like Howard Stark, if you're their butler or their manservant,
yeah, but he's
you're
not
on.
No, but he's not talking
still
about
working
doing
for Howard Stark.
Sure, but he's talking about doing all of these duties for his wife. He
right.
needs to
yeah.
be doing the
well,
linens
then,
for her.
Well, maybe that's something that they just what they
unless
want.
Unless
they,
she's
they
the house
it.
Manager, or so, you know.
unless he's just so devoted to her,
or
that,
she's terrible
you know he's
at it.
He could be like Kaylee Cuoco.
I'm just
you know,
saying,
loves to serve.
He's whipped.
It's
well,
it
she could be
Tim,
a terrible
wait. Let
this is actually something that you would have had then was having the manservant, but also traditionally when you had manservants, butlers, valets, and things like that, they didn't typically have that outside life. They weren't typically married. that was,
in fact,
that's very odd for somebody of that level to have been married.
Getting married would mean that you would have to resign your position.
So would that, I mean, then,
for a woman, if she was a teacher, right, at that time, if she got married, she would have to resign.
Right, and we saw a piece of that at the end when
ooh, no,
Carter goes, yes,
no, you'd be
not
more
for a teacher.
You would be more likely to be hired if you were a married teacher than a single teacher, depending on where you were.
Yeah, in the teaching profession,
yeah,
I think.
In the,
but
in
anything
50s,
else.
Yeah, no.
But we did see Carter at the end when she's coming into the new apartment.
Yes.
You know, how long do you plan to work for the telephone company until I get married? See, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
But, okay, my question then, with the whole thing with the manservice thing, does that then play into the theory that Mrs. Jarvis is cover? If he's just in the habit of he's doing the job all the time.
She could be cover, or it may be that she has some kind of the other top secret job and he takes care of the duties to serve him.
Or, we could be overthinking it.
We probably are. Wait, what?
Wait, what? Us?
Yeah.
It never happens here, ever.
Oh, no. What do we think about that little implosion bomb thing that blows up and then sucks everything back in?
I don't understand how Agent Carter and Jarvis didn't get sucked in with that, with the last, with the whole
well,
truck
okay,
full.
Well,
yes, got away.
Yeah, it's...
they were just out of Dodge.
Right.
Go, Sulu!
In cars, yeah. Cars that accelerate so fast in the
1940s.
If people can run just fast enough to not
one.
Get sucked into the earthquake that devoured Los Angeles in various movies.
Yes. Or the volcano.
I like that she disarmed it with an atomizer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I'm talking about the last huge explosion, which was the whole very truck full of these bombs.
In the water.
In the water. But how, why being in the water, is that going to change?
Oh, we used to do nuclear testing underwater. And
we did.
But it still made a huge mushroom cloud. It affected things for a long, long ways.
It tamps the explosive. Plus, it depends on how it works. If it's got to suck in a certain amount, if you have enough volume of water,
mm-hmm.
There you go.
And we saw at the end
didn't
what they did
a tree
to the lake.
Near them?
No, not that I saw.
Well, and didn't it go over a cliff? So
yeah.
It's not like
so it's over a
things
yeah.
are
over
sucking
a
at right angle.
Yeah, it's.
But I
it's
thought that there was a tree that went past them.
I didn't see
or
that
a fence. And
there was a tree that it was in the final effect. There was a tree that kind of whooshed in, but I don't know that it was.
Was it right on the edge of the street?
Edge
of the road.
I thought it went past them, and that's why I was like, so why didn't they end up?
They got lucky.
Well, the tree would be taller and have more mass than they did.
That
so.
Could be, yeah. It's comic
okay,
book
okay,
physics.
Fine.
That's exactly
fine.
What it is, comic book physics.
And I'm overthinking
it's,
it.
It's
that's Neil deGrasse Tyson.
I'm watching a Tom
they,
Cruise
they
film
hang
walks away
the
from the
characters.
Explosion.
Wait a minute. Wait.
There you go. Well, that's the same. Marie's got the answer.
Wait, what did Marie, what, Marie, what did you say?
Who cares about if it's accurate? I can't kill off Agent Carter in the first episode of a show called Agent Carter.
Well, that's
so,
true.
Know, who cares about accuracy in science?
See, the thing about it is,
there'll be flashbacks.
Well, Peggy Carter in the old folks' home could be a life model decoy. I mean, she could be dead this whole time.
You guys stop it with me.
a very unreliable narrator.
Yes.
And that's when I died.
Or Captain America was hallucinating when he saw her. And
the whole thing's just a fever dream.
The whole thing is Cap dreaming in the Arctic.
He never made it out of the Vitarase chamber.
Everything
is just a hallucination.
We find out that it ties in with another Disney property because this whole thing was Han Solo and Carbonite imagining the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe.
It could be.
And now,
so next week, well, now that we've gone for an hour around and around on this, let's talk about what's going on next week. Next week we get a little bit more. I think, and I don't know, the preview could be the season.
That looked more like the season.
It looked
more like
a season.
Or the next episode's going
to
be very, very busy.
Yes. we've got a confrontation between Peggy and Jarvis coming up sometime.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because she's going to find out that he's
gotcha.
Lying to her.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well, she finds out that
she
Stark
will.
Apparently is lying. I mean, she apparently
yeah. And we've got a shouting match between Peggy and Howard. I don't think we're going to get S.H.I.E.L.D. until the last episode.
Probably not.
No, probably not.
Oh,
are we going to get more of that radio show going on?
Oh, I'm sure.
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 Oh, yeah.
I hope so.
Because I just want to see more of the sound guy slapping poultry.
Yeah. Oh, I know. That was fun. And I was looking at, that's how they do that. I'll have to try that someday. Mm-hmm. You know, because coming up with the sound effects is always the challenge. To make
I
want to
see her like bursting into the final episode, bursting into it and telling them what if they have it.
No, they hire her as a story consultant. That's her new cover, right?
But there's got to be some sort of a tie-in with that story and the story arc.
Yes. Yeah, it could be. So Leviathan is coming. We don't know what Leviathan is. Mm. We've got an ally in Agent Sousa in the office. I think Thompson's going to come around. That's the vibe that I'm getting.
The gray areas of Thompson and the chief.
Yeah.
They're potentially people who could come around.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
Can't drive a truck guy.
Yeah, he's toast.
At some point, he's going to get his. He's going to get a fork in the gut.
He's going to get a fork in the gut or something, the equivalent of a fork in the gut.
Okay, who's going to be the unexpected death?
The unexpected death. The Whedon death? That's a good question.
I don't know.
Hold on.
We had quite a few today, but this evening, but they weren't necessarily unexpected.
Well, it was a very violent.
The body count was very high. Yeah, the body count was high, and I don't know. I think, Dan, you got a good question. Who is going to be Wash?
We don't know yet because we don't have enough of the
character establishment.
Yeah, actually, you know, well, the Wash, if it's going to be the person who you are developing sympathy for, and is going to be,
it'd be the waitress.
It's the waitress. The waitress is toast.
Yeah.
Wait. So.
Yeah, but would they kill?
What's the Wash?
Who's gonna die?
Yeah, it's a. Well, it's not a Whedon show though.
Doesn't matter if we're gonna sit there and say who's going to be the sacrificial lamb.
Well, that's true.
It's gonna be the waitress.
I don't think so because you've already had her other roommate die.
Well, that's true. Well, that's why it is her
because you wouldn't do it.
That's right. And this is the point. It either becomes the resolution that finally pushes her. She's let people back in, and now she pushes them all away finally, and she becomes the ice cold director of S.H.I.E.L.D. And everyone sits there, and goes yes, ma'am, and she's
or she becomes.
What about Sousa?
She gets past it. Sousa's a possibility too. Or she ends up marrying him.
No.
That's not a bad theory.
He bets on her.
That's what I was thinking earlier.
The chief, you know what could happen? The chief gets killed. Stark comes back in because he's been cleared of all charges and says, all right, we're doing things a little bit differently. And because he's the one that called Peggy to come back and help him put S.H.I.E.L.D. together. We've seen that phone call. Mm. We've already seen that phone call. So at some point, Howard Stark is involved in establishing S.H.I.E.L.D. and he brings Peggy Carter in from wherever it is that she is.
Right.
So I'm gonna go out on a limb. I'm gonna put my theory out there. The chief gets killed toward the end of this 7-week run.
He sacrifices himself.
And Howard somehow ends up running things and puts Peggy in charge. I think that may be what happens.
Possibly.
We'll see.
So then I have a question for you guys as writers. Why do we have to kill someone off for the plot to continue?
Because
why is that necessary? Why should we throw away a character?
Oh, yeah.
Because it raises the stakes for the protagonist. Now, we know we can't kill Peggy Carter because her name's on the show.
Isn't that kind of cheap?
That's storytelling.
But yeah, it's visual. It's another visual shorthand.
Well, plus, I mean,
it's
the hero's journey. I mean, the hero at some point has to be on his own, and the mentor goes away, and the best friend goes away, and eventually that journey to become the hero is a solo journey. So at some point, somebody on Peggy's side is going to die.
Well,
because it just—it's just story.
At one point, just like they played out in Galaxy Quest, making fun of the red shirts.
Exactly.
That, you know, he's the unnamed person that dies to show it's the situation's hopeless. Well, the thing is, nowadays, you know, you can't really just have your expendable no-name people. It's got to be more of an impacting.
Yeah.
Audiences want to care about
Somebody, whoever dies has to be somebody the audience is emotionally invested in. And we're not there yet, but we will be at least by the halfway point, we'll be able to pick one or two that are good candidates.
It's also, be an unexpected but one. Also, yeah. We're kind of establishing, because she's in the intelligence community, they're going to dance to a certain degree close to the Bond model.
Yeah.
The James Bond model.
Yeah.
And that is always going to be that the intelligence community is where the people you care about get killed.
Yeah.
So now we're probably going to be closer to a little more, not quite as cliched Bond kind of storytelling here, but it's the same kind of thing. It's like, you know, if you're in the spy community, you know,
people you know are going to die.
People you know are going to die. So it's just going to go with the territory of the storytelling. Yeah.
Well, and we've already established what, you know, Carter is in that mindset where people around me die.
Right.
And we've already put that into this story universe that something like that could happen because it already has.
But it would be unrealistic
for
these characters to be operating in this world and there not to be
any collateral
damage.
Well, now Jarvis could be a candidate as well, but I think they would keep him around if it goes past another season.
Jarvis has to exist long enough for there to be a reason for Tony to name his AI Jarvis, which means he knew Jarvis as a child.
Yeah. Yeah, so Jarvis is going to be around for a while, which means Waitress or Sousa are the chief candidates.
They're the two potential targets.
If it's the Waitress, or if they just kill someone off just to make her angst and be like, "Oh, I must finish my quest,"
I don't think the death would do that. I don't think the death would serve that purpose so much. I think the death is going to serve the story. There's going to be a reason for it within the story. Okay. And it's going to make sense from the standpoint of however Peggy reacts to it. But I think that at some point we are going to get one of these characters killed off. I think so.
If this was a regular television show with a regular season length, if Marvel had not already done a pretty good job of establishing playing in this world, playing with these types of stories, these heroes' journeys, without recognizing that there are pitfalls, and they've dodged most of them pretty well.
Yeah.
I think that the odds are good. We're not going to get some of the cliche stuff. We're not going to get some of the things that are going to be, why, God, why, beating your head against the television.
Yes.
You know,
screaming because you had to break somebody's neck.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Wait.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Go ahead,
Heather.
Well, I was going to say, even just looking here online, I mean, we're talking about something that's 8 episodes, going over 7 weeks, that's filling this break for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And just seeing what there was on the live tweeting, seeing some of the reaction you have online here, when asked about the possibility of another season for Agent Carter, Butters and Frazekas respond, yes. So they're already looking at that, and it's basically just, what is the response today?
Right.
That's not good. I don't think that bodes well.
No, I think it does, because what I saw live tweeting was really popular, and I think with the franchise that they have established, with the fact that it was huge, you know, Ant-Man, which I don't know if we want to talk about that at all. You've got Ant-Man coming out. You've got the Avengers. You've got this, that. I think that... And with some of the backlash that they've had about the female characters in the whole Marvel universe, to have somebody like her, that this is the Agent Carter show. It's not, she's a sidekick. It's not, she's a big character, but we're not giving her a movie yet or anything like that. I think they're going to aim for at least a second season. So a lot of your characters are going to stick around, because this is more, also has that 40s feel. Yes, some people are going to die, but back then it wasn't, it was the red shirts more. It wasn't.
Well, I think that there's a strong chance that one of these characters is going to die toward the end of this run, and it's going to help set up Peggy being in charge. So I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see how our theories play out over the next 7 weeks. And in the meantime, if any of you out there have theories, you can certainly share that with us. You can share them on Twitter, and you can use the
@SciFiForChicks,
@SciFiForMe. And also you can send us an email, level1187@scififorme.com. You can leave a comment on the boards, or you can call our hotline, which doesn't get used a whole lot, but we've still got it. Area code 573-42-SCIFI. And that's going to do it for us tonight. Marie Lim, Heather French, Maya Aides.
Good night.
Dan Hanley.
Good night.
Tim Harvey.
Good night.
Make sure to subscribe to us. Good night.
Thanks. Yes, subscribe. And good night, moon. Good night, everybody. We are...
That's not a moon. Yeah, that's no night. Moon.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Fleming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Fleming Dog Media. You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.